Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. My name is Mark Shiver. Glad to have you listening on this Friday. Well, we have an interesting show for you today, one I'm very excited about. We are going to talk with Melissa Quinn from the Daily Signal. She's going to tell us about something Congressman Mark Walker is doing to try to prevent the federal government from spending more of your tax dollars bailing out insurance companies as it relates to the increasing failure that is the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare. Also, our good friend Tim Boyum will join us, and we'll be talking a lot about the latest goings on down in Charlotte. And by the way, last night, Mayor Roberts did institute a curfew, and things seemed to go much calmer. The National Guard was there. We saw video of them on the streets, and so hopefully things will be trending towards a more calm situation in Charlotte. However, we do have a short audio I want to play for you of a gentleman who is one of the protesters, and he indicated that it's his goal and the goal of other protesters to head into the suburbs. And so we'll play that for you now and let you listen to that.
We need to go where the immediate threat is at. Whether it's a threat or not, I just want us to go to the area where the gentleman lives so we can actually have the people with the money be concerned about the people without the money.
So you plan to protest in the suburbs?
Yes, because I figure if we go hit them in their area, then they'll be more potent to listen to what's going on in that area.
The protests here turned violent. Do you anticipate any rioting, any looting?
No, to me, that protest was not violent. If nobody got shot, nobody got hurt, that's not violence to me.
They said that an officer was hit with a rock. There were doors broken on a Walmart.
At the present moment, they need to look at the circumstances. If you're gonna go tit for tat, there's gonna be tit for tat on a constant basis. We want to cut it down. We want to make sure there's not any more violence going on, but let them know we're serious about taking care of the whole city and not just one part of the city.
Do you know where you guys plan to go in the suburbs tomorrow?
At the present moment, I'm not for sure, but I know they was looking for the South Park area, Tivola and Fairview. But we're going down to the church now to see what they're going to do.
Well, that certainly is, what do you call that, disturbing, interesting? By the way, that was Mark Barber of WSOC Channel 9 talking with this guy, and there's a picture of him. He looks like he's wearing a polo-type shirt or a golf shirt, sitting inside what appears to be a rather nice vehicle, but that's not violence. You know, if nobody gets shot, well, somebody did get shot, and one of the people died, and so I'm not sure how to really respond to this. Just seems to be immune to the reality of what's going on and very willing to justify the destruction of other people's property, businesses, and now there are plans to head to the suburbs and South Park, and that is some fairly nice area of Charlotte, so hopefully this will not come to fruition, because we'll talk to Tim Boyum and talk about how some of the sports figures, Cam Newton and Michael Jordan, are trying to encourage folks that, you know, this isn't the way to go about this. Having a dialogue and a conversation and wanting a just end to what happened is one thing, but going around rioting and destroying other people's property certainly is not helping anything. And what's interesting, seen all over social media today multiple times, that up to 70% of the people who are rioting are non-residents. They are being driven into town, into Charlotte, from other states. And this is typical. We saw this during the so-called Moral Monday events that Reverend Barber would hold at the General Assembly. Very few folks actually from North Carolina, but a lot of people from other states and other locales coming in to stir things up. And so this is not a surprise that this is going on also in the Charlotte area. And one last thing before we talk to Melissa Quinn. Interestingly enough, Mayor Roberts is really showing that she may not really have her finger on the pulse of her city. And the fact is that yesterday she proclaimed Charlotte was open for business and assured citizens that order would be maintained. However, lots of people were told to stay home from work. A lot of businesses had their windows covered with plywood after the rioters had, broken windows and such as that. And Mayor Roberts is saying people are walking the street, conducting business as usual. Just, it's normal. And in the meanwhile, you've got Humvees rolling through the streets with the Charlotte National Guard responding to the state of emergency that Governor McCrory appropriately declared, and the Highway Patrol there helping to reinforce the police in Charlotte. So it's interesting that Mayor Roberts would walk around with her head in a cloud. You know, it's business as usual. Everything's good. Reminds me of the guy in the movie Jaws, you know, from what, 40 years ago, saying, you know, come to Amity, it's okay. And there's a shark out there, you know, harming people. And Mayor Roberts is saying, you know, it's all good. You know, it's business as usual. And you've got Bank of America, Duke, Wells Fargo, encouraging tens of thousands of folks that work there uptown to stay home. And so I can't help but think, and maybe this is a stretch, and if you'd like to tell me so on Twitter, at Mark Shiver, feel free to do so, or at What Matters NC. But I just don't have a lot of confidence in Mayor Roberts, the way she's handling this. Her public statements to me indicate someone who really is not in full grasp of the situation, and can't help but make me wonder if she didn't have good judgment over this whole HB2 thing as well. Perhaps her head was not fully engaged in that, as it seems not to be regarding this situation in Charlotte. Finally, the wife of the gentleman, Mr. Scott, who was shot in Charlotte by the police, she has released a video that I guess she was taking. It was a cell phone video for the wife of Keith Lamont Scott. This is breaking news just released here a few minutes ago, and she can be heard yelling at the police not to shoot him. And several people have already commented that it's interesting that she just continues to rail against the police even after he was shot, which is not what you would think to be a normal reaction. One would think that one would run over to their loved one and be in shock, and yet she is hurling obscenities repeatedly. And so the debate over whether or not the dash cam and body cam videos from the police should be released, it's really not a debate anymore. They've said they're not going to do it, and the State Bureau of Investigation is now on board. And while this is all going on, I don't think that there will be any release of that video anytime soon, because it's an ongoing investigation. So strap in. We've got a great show for you today, some great guests, and we sure do appreciate you listening to What Matters in North Carolina. It's our pleasure now on What Matters in North Carolina to welcome Melissa Quinn to the program. She is a senior news reporter for the Daily Signal. Melissa, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, I wanted to chat with you today because you have a excellent article at the Daily Signal, which our listeners can find at dailysignal.com, and it's called Conservative Groups Put Spotlight on Obamacare Bailouts for Insurers. Now, I'll have to tell you, Melissa, that I would imagine most people in the, you know, the volume of noise that's being put out there from both the Trump campaign and the Clinton campaign, with all of the important state elections that are taking place, that probably thinking about the condition of insurance companies in Obamacare is probably not at the top of a lot of people's minds. But as I read your article, I thought, my goodness, this is something that is very, very important. So I appreciate you being willing to talk about it with us today. And certainly, as the Congress is in what is known as lame duck status here, particularly it will be after the election, you write that there's possibly a fight that's going to take place that involves insurance companies. Can you give us kind of a broad brush view of what you're talking about there?
Yes, and I think you're absolutely right that as we are in the middle of a presidential election, it seems like people are moving their attention away from the work that Congress is doing and obviously focusing on November when we elect our next president. But what the Affordable Care Act did when it was passed back in 2009 is it put in place three different programs that are commonly known as the three R's. And when we're talking about these potential quote-unquote bailouts for insurance companies, we're referring to two of those three programs, the risk corridor program and the reinsurance program. And what those programs basically did was mitigate the risks that insurance companies are taking by participating in the Affordable Care Act. Obviously, it shook up the market a lot, and as a result, insurance companies were left to sort of wade into uncharted territory. And the programs, through different qualifications and things like that, to basically transfer money from insurance companies who have succeeded under the ACA to those who have not succeeded, whether that's the amount of profit that they've brought in, or I should say the money that they ended up losing, or just really the type of enrollee population that they had, whether they were more sick and therefore more expensive. But the programs, unfortunately, now that we're going into our fourth open enrollment period, they have not performed as they were expected. And as a result, the insurance companies ended up getting less money than they expected to when the law was passed back in 2009. We've seen a lot of insurance companies, United Healthcare, Anthem, Humana, decide to pull out of the exchanges because they're losing money. And the fear among conservative groups is that in an effort to sort of appease the big players, the insurance companies who are threatening to leave the exchanges because they've lost money, Congress may go ahead during the lame duck period, pass legislation that would extend the lifespan of these companies. Of these programs. They expire at the end of the year. So the conservative groups are really expecting that there may be a fight on this, but we really won't know until after the election.
Our guest here trying to help us understand some of what's going on with the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known more popularly as Obamacare, is Melissa Quinn, senior news reporter for the Daily Signal. Now, basically, to summarize and to help me understand what you just said, the program was designed to make sure that insurance companies really didn't lose a lot of money by participating in this grand experiment of trying to provide health care and requiring health care to individuals and from companies across the country. Suddenly, it seems like that, like sticking a pin in a balloon, the air out of that plan is quickly going away, and insurance companies are finding themselves with increasingly greater losses because of their participation in the program. Is that a good starting point?
It is correct. Obviously, because the ACA, because Obamacare really shook up the market so much, experts say that it was likely that it was going to take a few years for insurance companies to figure out how they should price their plans so that they ended up being profitable. But in terms of one of the programs talking about some of the issues here, why insurance companies did not get the money that they thought they were going to, it was actually Congress that stepped in and played a role in that. I'm not sure if you remember back in 2014 when Congress was debating a government spending bill, Senator Marco Rubio really led an effort to make one of these programs, the risk corridor program, budget neutral. So basically, he said that no taxpayer dollars can be used to put money into this program that was then going to be distributed to the insurance companies. And that provision was also included in the government spending bill for 2015. So as a result, the money that was collected by the federal government for the risk corridor program ended up being significantly less than what they had expected. And because no taxpayer dollars could be used to boost up the amount of money that was needed for the insurance companies, they ended up getting far less than what they thought. Insurance companies requested amounts from the federal government, and they only got 12.6% of what they were hoping to get. So Congress did play a role in this. Obviously, Senator Rubio and Republicans are saying this is a good thing, protecting taxpayer dollars. But again, we'll see how this plays out in November after the election, how Congress sort of responds to this pressure.
Melissa, in North Carolina specifically, I was reading an article the other day. I think it was at the Politico website. And it said that North Carolina, even though we did not expand Medicaid, which has been something that folks on the left have been screaming for since the advent of the Affordable Care Act, even though we didn't do that, we, on one side of the coin, as a state, could be looked at as having been a success story, so to speak, for Obamacare, in that the numbers in this article say 600,000 people signed up. But on the flip side, it can also be a, and I'm quoting now, a quintessential Obamacare failure story, because the insurance companies, as you have just described, have really taken it on the chin. And what's happening here now in North Carolina is that United Healthcare has pulled out of the state as far as participating in the Affordable Care Act. Aetna has pulled out, at least partially, leaving Blue Cross and Blue Shield the only insurance company in the state to provide Obamacare plans. And they have said that their losses in 2014 and 2015 topped $400 million. So the interesting thing to me, listening to what you say, Melissa, is that I find it really kind of amazing that the American people, I guess they were drawn in by the allure of insurance, but having the government, you know, set up to mitigate risk to private companies, I think that's bizarre and unheard of, really.
Yes, and I do want to be clear. I think it was one of these programs are not necessarily new and exclusive to Obamacare. One of them, and I can't remember, I believe it was the third, the risk adjustment program, was actually included in parts of Medicare. So these are not necessarily new, but you are correct. It's interesting that you bring up Blue Cross Blue Shield, because Blue Cross and Blue Shield is one of the major insurance companies who is lobbying Congress very hard to do something to help extend these programs, whether it's putting more money into the program, getting rid of that provision that Senator Rubio worked to include in the budget bill, or if it's just extending their lifespans altogether. And in a lot of states, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and counties for that matter, if we look at more of the local level, Blue Cross Blue Shield seems to be the one major insurer that everybody knows of that is holding on and is deciding to continue to sell plans, even as their competitors, Humana, Aetna, United Healthcare, are sort of running in the opposite direction.
So our guest is Melissa Quinn here of the Daily Signal, doing an excellent job in breaking down the challenge that is in front of Congress, whether or not they will act to continue these programs that help stop the hemorrhaging, so to speak, of losses that insurance companies participating in Obamacare are facing. And you quote a guy named Mr. Nascimento. Is that how you pronounce that?
Yes, Nathan Nascimento from Freedom Partners.
Yeah, he says insurers must, from the perspective of the administration, be prioritized, because if insurers bail out of the exchanges, Obamacare can be deemed a failure, a complete and utter failure. So there's an obvious tension going on here between the desire of President Obama and his administration to, you know, leave a legacy that Obamacare worked and look what we've done for the country. And yet in reality, it's costing taxpayers money. Insurance companies are having are underwater in this thing. And so those in Congress that are, you know, fighting the conservative battle, they really have a lot at stake here to try to, you know, regardless of what the president wants in his legacy, they really have to act and keep the government from continuing to prop these companies up.
Oh, absolutely. And it's interesting, you know, Congressman Mark Walker, who is from North Carolina, he in the House has really been leading the charge, making sure that taxpayer dollars are protected, that no more money goes toward these programs than was originally intended when the law was passed back in 2009. In the Senate, obviously, Senator Rubio has been working on this, and Senator Sass has really stepped up and started fighting this battle as well. But it's really, obviously, it seems like from what I'm hearing and from speaking with different members of Congress, the Republicans, and in particular the conservatives, they really don't want to put any more taxpayer dollars into these two programs. Obviously, it would sort of be seen as a way to help continue move the law along, make things better for insurance companies, but it's very much so the Democrats who are looking for fixes to the Affordable Care Act. And even though some Democrats have said that it would really be an uphill battle to get Republicans to agree to any changes to these Obamacare programs, others are saying that this is kind of the fix that they need as a way to make the law work. And the Obama administration obviously has an interest in this, given the fact that it's named Obamacare.
Right, exactly.
And they are also, the administration also seems to be putting some pressure on Congress as well to help make the law work, whether it's through extending the programs or giving more money to them.
Now, you do have a quote here from Representative Mark Walker of North Carolina saying that there's a fear of congressional leaders extending these programs, the risk corridor and reinsurance programs, when they come back to Washington after the election, but before the next Congress is sworn in. And you say that, you quote him as saying, that's why we're trying to make quite a hullabaloo of saying this is a gross injustice that's burdening our constituents, the taxpayers, once again. As far as Representative Walker goes, as you have indicated, he's been you know, very vocal about this. Does he, being relatively new, does he have the kind of clout, do you think, that can rally the troops, so to speak, and garner support for what he, you know, is trying to do?
I think that is an interesting question, and I think we'll have to see sort of what happens. But in the context of his involvement in this debate in the Affordable Care Act, he in the House, along with Senator Sass in the Senate, they introduced identical bills that would make sure that the program is very complicated the way it works, but it would essentially protect taxpayer dollars and make sure that money that was intended to go back into the Treasury through the reinsurance program is actually put there. And Senator Sass has a bill in the Senate doing the exact same thing. But look, as we've seen in the Senate with Senator Rubio having success, Republicans do not like this law. They do not like Obamacare. They do not like the way it's turned out for their constituents in terms of higher premiums, higher deductibles, narrowing networks, and inability to find doctors. So it seems like this is an issue that with Congressman Walker on it and Senator Sass on it, it definitely has the attention of Republicans in Congress. And my understanding just from speaking with his office last week and earlier this week was that his main focus right now is rallying support for this legislation and making sure that the money that was supposed to be returned to the Treasury, that money that belongs to the taxpayers, actually goes where it was intended and is not distributed back out to the insurance companies.
Our guest is Melissa Quinn of the Daily Signal. You can find her work at dailysignal.com, talking about a piece that she wrote a couple of days ago entitled Conservative Groups Put Spotlight on Obamacare Bailouts for Insurers. Now, I wanted to ask you, or I wanted to tell you real quickly, kind of anecdotally, that I got personally slapped around by Obamacare when I did my taxes this year. My daughter had been out of the country as a missionary, and prior to that, she was working a part-time job, so she got insurance through the Affordable Care Act. And when she came back, she moved in with you know, myself and her mother for a few months. And when we were going through our taxes, because she had just barely lived with us for 6 months after coming back from overseas, we had to declare her as a dependent. Well, the discount that she received from subsidy that she received from, you know, being someone who was working a part-time job preparing to go out of the country, we had to pay it back. Mm-hmm. And it was like $2,000. And I'm like, wait a minute. My kid buys insurance, you know, in another city, comes home, and I have to pay, you know, $2,000. It was unbelievable. And I think that certainly there have been stories like this all across the country. And yet, Melissa, we don't really see a groundswell of optimism among the general public against Obamacare.
Oh, absolutely. And I can guarantee you that you are not the only person who went to file their taxes and finds out in hindsight that you owe thousands of dollars because of what the administration and the IRS would say is subsidies or tax credits that you received that you technically should not have received. But I think you are just one of many, many people who are really feeling the squeeze and the ramifications of the law. People who are preparing to shop for insurance come the next open enrollment period, or who are deciding to stick with their current plan and are seeing their premiums increase. I mean, we're seeing these rate hikes going on all over the country.
Absolutely.
Where some individuals could end up paying over $600 a month in premiums because the insurance companies are trying to figure out a way to turn a profit now. But you're certainly not the only person who goes to file their taxes and is very surprised to hear what the IRS has back. It says back both in terms of whether or not the tax credit that you or your daughter received was, you know, quote unquote, calculated correctly. I mean, these are the sorts of stories and things that we're hearing now almost daily.
Yeah. So off topic just slightly, because you obviously are well-versed in this issue. Is it one of those things where, because let me just preface my question quickly by saying that part of the reason I think Donald Trump has been successful, particularly in the primaries, was that he tapped into an anger that people felt about the status quo in Washington. And one of the questions I've asked is that, you know, we have in the Congress a Republican majority. You know, why have they not repealed this whole thing? Of course, President Obama would veto that. But it's the inaction on something like this. And I will grant you that Representative Walker is working hard, and Senator Rubio. But the perception is that this law might simply be here to stay. Now, if there's a Republican administration and if there's a Republican majority in Congress, do you think two things? One, do you think that they would work to try to repeal this or change it significantly? And number two, is your sense that that is something that the American public wants, or has this, like a lot of other government programs, just become part of life?
I do think that if there were, and I want to be very clear, that's an if, depending on what happens in November, if there were a Republican president and a Republican Congress, I do think that Republicans in Congress would repeal and offer a replacement for the Affordable Care Act. And I'm not quite sure if you remember, but a few months ago, when House Speaker Paul Ryan, we've been hearing about these task forces and a Republican replacement for the Affordable Care Act for a very, very long time now. But a few months ago, House Republicans actually unveiled their replacement for the Affordable Care Act. It was one in a series of policy proposals that Speaker Ryan really pushed with his new agenda. And that new policy, that replacement plan, keeps in place some aspects of the Affordable Care Act. I believe it was the pre-existing conditions, that provision, as well as the ability for young people to stay on their parents' plans until they were 26. There were some details of the plan that did need to be worked out, including how it would be paid for, which is a big if and a very important factor. But Republicans, both during the 2014 midterm elections and still today, they talk a lot about repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act if they did have the possibility to do that in the next Congress. So I think, depending on what happens in November, if we do see Republicans maintain their majority in Congress and then take the White House, there would definitely be efforts to repeal and replace the law, as they've been saying for quite some time now.
Well, Melissa, you're just absolutely awesome, as always, and it's our great pleasure to have you on the show. Just not that you probably really care, but my opinion is that, you know, I'm in favor of people who cannot get insurance because of pre-existing conditions being able, you know, to find some help somehow, even if the government has to be involved, which, you know, as a conservative, I hesitate to say that. But I don't think the American public should be penalized for not having insurance. I think that's onerous. And ultimately, you know, I think we should be free to choose whether or not, you know, we want to buy insurance or can afford to buy insurance. And so that's my biggest problem, particularly since I had to pay $2,000. I don't think that these financial penalties ought to be, you know, assessed to the American taxpayer. That's just my opinion.
Well, I definitely think you're not alone in terms of allowing those with pre-existing conditions, making sure that they're able to get the health coverage they need. The issue for lots of insurers is how to go ahead and price those plans to make sure that they're profiting and are able to pay medical claims and still make money themselves.
Yeah.
But we'll leave that to the policymakers.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's certainly not an easy issue, but you have made it much more easy to understand. So Melissa Quinn from the Daily Signal, thank you very much for being our guest here on What Matters in North Carolina.
Oh, well, thank you again.
All right. Well, as usual on Fridays, it's always our pleasure to welcome Tim Boyum to What Matters in North Carolina. Tim, keeping you very busy this week, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's been a wild week, to say the least. It's more for my colleagues in Charlotte who have had to cover this. And so, you know, we've been thinking about them and the city of Charlotte and everything that's been going on there. It's a challenging time for the city, although last night was a lot calmer. So, you know, we hope that goes on through the weekend. And we'll just have to see moving forward, but we just, you know, hope for a continued calmness in the city.
Absolutely. Of course, as the anchor of Capitol Tonight on the Time Warner Cable News Channel, you get a lot of different perspectives on a lot of different issues going on across our state. When you first heard about the shooting of Mr. Scott, what was your initial thought? Was it like, oh no, here we go in North Carolina or something like that? Or what was your...
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely concern. I mean, first of all, when anyone gets shot and killed, regardless of race, how, who did it, I mean, you know, it's challenging. But, you know, you can't help but have that thought, oh no, not in our state. But it really didn't hit home for me that this was in our home state until, because, it, you know, I don't live in Charlotte, I live in Raleigh, but I started seeing images of things. For instance, the windows of Buffalo Wild Wings were smashed in. And I was just there when Hillary Clinton was here a couple weeks ago eating there. And I was sitting just inside, you know, that restaurant 20 feet away from the window. And I saw pictures of our news vehicles down there from my colleagues that had smashed in windows.
Wow.
As well. So, you know, it didn't really hit home until then. And I think that's the hard part about, and it's sort of a realization that these issues are real and can happen anywhere in the country. You know, we see it on TV, and when you see it on TV and it's in Baltimore or Ferguson or somewhere else, you know, you think it's terrible what's going on, regardless of your viewpoint on the issues. But it doesn't. I don't think it hits home for most people until you start seeing and recognizing that this really can happen anywhere. And I think the people of Charlotte and the people of North Carolina are quickly realizing that this week.
Absolutely. Tim, it's interesting to look at some of the response of North Carolina's prominent sports figures, such as Cam Newton for the Carolina Panthers, of course, Michael Jordan also in Charlotte. Jordan said that he wanted to express condolences to the Scott family for their loss. He wants to wish a full recovery to those who have been injured. He said that in light of these tragic events, it's more important than ever that we restore calm and come together as a community in peaceful demonstration and conversation. Cam Newton also calling for, a restoration of calm. And he had a press conference where he said multiple times, we need to hold one another accountable. From your position, do you think that these guys who have prominence in athletics, do people listen to them? Or are their words taken a little bit more seriously, say, than a politician's?
I think it's definitely possible. You know, athletes have this they face this challenge all the time. They do have a lot of power with consumers, in some ways a lot more than politicians, because probably more people in North Carolina know who Cam Newton and Michael Jordan is than Pat McCrory or Jennifer Roberts.
Right.
I shouldn't say probably. I would virtually guarantee it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, their words can say a lot. They can mean a lot. But there are athletes out there, and for the longest time, someone like, and this is before his personal issues he had, Tiger Woods used to get hit a lot, and even Michael Jordan used to get hit a lot for not taking on social issues because they felt like they had a responsibility and a voice, but really they just wanted to remain private citizens as much as they could behind the scenes. It's risen to a different level recently because of Colin Kaepernick, the San Francisco 49er quarterback, you know, who is kneeling or sitting during the national anthem. And so, you know, here we are, this issue happens in Charlotte. I think Michael Jordan's in a little bit of a different position because his, you know, the Charlotte store, the Hornets store got damaged and looted during this. So, you know, I mean, I think people might have expected a response just on the basis of that alone. And, you know, Cam Newton's the star quarterback of the team in the city where this happened. So, yes, I think what they say can have a huge impact. You know, whether people believe personally that they should getting involved in these is probably a whole other story. But, yeah, I mean, people are definitely going to listen to what they have to say. I posted Michael Jordan's statement on my Twitter feed last night, and I got all sorts of responses back to me. Some were saying, you know, good that he's speaking up on this, and others were saying it was a hollow statement. They were, you know, didn't like that. They thought it was just a stereotypical type of statement that he felt like he had to make. So, you know, they're going to be criticized regardless, but I definitely think they can have an influence.
Well, yeah, I would tend to agree with you there. And I was just thinking, Tim, as you said, that athletes have a lot more, power with the consumers, that maybe a, Phil Berger or Tom Apodaca line of sneakers would help.
I don't know what they would look like, and I don't know how they'd sell, but that'd be a fun story to follow.
Well, I'm sure Apodaca's would work well in the low post, you know, as kind of a bigger guy there. But anyway.
They do dig in a lot, quite a bit. Maybe they should get cleats or something for baseball. They like to dig into their position.
Exactly. So, anyway, I guess that's a little off topic. But staying on this Charlotte theme now and kind of mixing in a little politics, which is in no way intended to draw attention away from the seriousness of the situation. But Governor McCrory, in his position as the governor of the state, was able to send state resources in the form of Highway Patrol and National Guard to Charlotte. Big story yesterday, and Nick Oxner was telling me that as early as 7 a.m. on Wednesday morning, the governor offered to send resources. The folks down in Charlotte, Mayor Roberts, said no, we're going to have likely have a peaceful night. And of course she was very wrong on that. Two things. Number one, she's catching a lot of heat. It would seem that some are questioning that she has, you know, not very good judgment in this situation and really doesn't have her finger on the pulse of the community. And secondly, is this something politically that will help McCrory to kind of get back out of the HB2 limelight and, you know, acting as chief executive and that sort of thing?
Well, on the Jennifer Roberts front, you know that city's never faced anything like that before. So, you know, it's a tough thing to sort of, you know, play Monday morning quarterback on that issue. I've seen significant amount of Republicans and Democrats that are very upset that they didn't accept that offer right away. Jennifer Roberts has said, we could have never expected it was going to be this, you know, what happened. And the police chief played a role in that. And the governor publicly at the news conference yesterday said he wasn't going to judge decisions that were made at the local level. Considering what happened that night, I think we can all look back and say, you know, probably it would have been helpful to have that.
Sure.
But there were also judgment calls yesterday that people had a concern about there not being a curfew initially. And there were reports that the state had, you know, strongly encouraged that they put a curfew in place. And then, of course, I think around 8 or 9 last night, Jennifer Roberts did put a curfew in place. But again, both of the political sides of the aisle there had concerns about that. I guess you have to live and learn, and next time, you know, I would be interested to ask her if she would do it next time, if she'd do it that way again.
Yeah. So,
you know, but, I mean, we'll just have to see. Now, as far as Governor McCrory is concerned, I mean, it gets HB2 off the table for now, so there's no question that it's helpful. The other thing with that, though, is we've always see during natural disasters, whether it is a hurricane recovery in a prior time, politically, it definitely helps a candidate who is in an office because they look more, whether it's presidential or, you know, gubernatorial or, you know, mayoral, they look, if they look like they're in charge and going, there's no question it helps that candidate. So could this help them? Yes. Or is it just a short-lived incident in late September and more things are to come in October? Obviously that remains to be seen, but it can't hurt. There's no question.
So our guest is Tim Boyum, the excellent anchor of Capital Tonight on the Time Warner Cable News Channel. Now, I was going to ask you about Governor McCrory, Tim, and we've been talking about this pretty much weekly, but we saw the Civitas poll that had McCrory up over Cooper, I think 2 or 3 points we had then. And some people raised an eyebrow about that, candidly, because heretofore we had seen this large gap between Cooper and McCrory. A few days later, the Elon poll came out, and it also had McCrory up a similar margin. And then public policy polling came out, and they had Cooper up, I think, by 5 or so. And now today we have Fox News and New York Times. Both of them are on divergent ends of the spectrum. I think Fox has McCrory up and or down, and New York Times has McCrory up. So this stuff is all over the place. It's very hard to get a real feel for this. But what's your take at this point here?
My best take on it is, at the end of the day, when we get to Election Day, I think the race will still be a toss-up. This race has been one of the toughest to gauge out of any of them because we have seen polling all over the map. I mean, in the last week, as you have just described, we've seen a pretty wild swing from poll to poll. And it's not like McCrory plus one to Cooper plus one. It's like Cooper plus 5, McCrory plus 3. And some of those are nearing the margin of error.
Yeah.
Which tells me that voters are being swayed in that race week to week much more than the Senate race or the presidential race. I could be wrong on that, too. These samples could be completely different, and we're just seeing a massive difference. It's hard for me to believe at the end of the day, with the divide in our state politically and with the high caliber of candidates that they are, as far as, you know, experience and recognition and whatnot, that this race is not going to go down to the wire and be within, at minimum, 2 to 3 points. So, you know, it's really hard to say one or the other whether I think someone is ahead at this point. But all I can say is I'd be shocked if this doesn't, you know, stay within 3 points when we get to Election Day. And it will probably continue to swing back and forth. But it's clear, looking at the results of polls, that it's the most inconsistent out of the three big races in North Carolina. And I don't know what's going to change that, because we've had some major, major issues come up in recent weeks, whether it's HB2 or this issue in Charlotte, that are you know, really swinging things one way or the other. And I think it's going to come down to the wire.
Our guest is Tim Boyum from Capital Tonight. Tim, on another issue, going back to HB2, and I thought we might get away from talking about that, but of course I guess we'll be talking about that for the next 20 years, but maybe not, but at least for the next few days. We had, last time you and I talked, there was a offer on the table where the governor and purportedly the leaders of the House and the Senate, Speaker Tim Moore and President Pro Tem Phil Berger, said, if you guys repeal your ordinance, then we'll call a special session and try to repeal House Bill 2. In fact, I think they were more affirmative, saying we will repeal House Bill 2. Suddenly, much as happened during the session where they did amend House Bill 2 a little bit, the deal fell apart in the final hours. Several members of the Charlotte City Council and others saying that Representative Becky Carney, Democrat from that area, was lobbying hard not to repeal the ordinance, and having said something, and I don't have the direct quote in front of me, but to the effect of, we need to keep HB2 front and center to help Democrats. So what do you make of this? This was sort of an interesting turn of events in an issue that is anything but normal.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised that there was people trying to convince the city council to not agree to this deal at all. They've been lobbied. I mean, I'm sure it was not a pleasant weekend for the individuals on the council. It's interesting that Becky Carney is the one that, you know, if true, supposedly did that, because I'm sure HRC and Equality NC were pushing Jennifer Roberts herself. I mean, I think we got the answer regardless at the end of the day when we saw Jennifer Roberts show up at the news conference with HRC. You know, I think at the end of the day, the Charlotte Council, if this is indeed what they want to do and not, you know, move forward with the deal, is saying there were no boycotts. There were no national stories done, no lawsuits when this ordinance was passed. It was all after HB2 was passed, and so HB2 is the problem. But I do think there's a larger issue out of all of that. Let's just say they did get down to a deal where they both agreed, all right, we'll repeal our ordinances and laws, and we'll go back to where we were in, you know, January and February of this year before all this happened. I think there is a massive amount of distrust between the city council and the legislature and the governor.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, it's almost like, you know, when we're kids, you know, you pull back and then I'll pull back. I think there's a lack of trust that if one does one thing, the other won't do what they promised. Now, what's interesting about this, and I'm hoping to talk to the speaker soon about this, the legislature, if they're this concerned about it, my understanding is that they could come in a special session, repeal HB2, and also they have the authority to repeal the Charlotte Ordinance. So if they're that concerned about it, I don't know why they don't just do that. So I don't know. But I do know from people I've talked to that trust is a major issue with any of this getting done.
Well, Tim, it was interesting because at the I was on a panel a couple of days ago talking about what does it mean to be a conservative, and sitting next to me was Senator Joyce Krawczyk, and she said pretty convincingly that it was not a done deal as far as people that she had talked to in the Senate. And so while the leaders may have felt like, you know, yeah, we'll call a special session and at the end of the day, we'll, you know, we will repeal this thing, she seemed to indicate pretty candidly that it was not, you know, going to be easy, to say the least, that the support was not widespread for going ahead and repealing House Bill 2. So that certainly would have made for interesting drama if they did, in fact, call a session and suddenly found themselves unable to repeal it.
Well, and that could lead to the theory that the legislative leaders and the governor were simply just trying to put pressure on Charlotte to make a move. You know, the underlying factor, which is an overlying theme of everything this year, is that these people are up for election. And HB2, which we saw in the Elon poll Monday, has a 95% recognition among likely voters. I mean,
wow.
That is insane. And on any issue, that 95% of people would know about an issue. And I know it's hard to believe in our bubble that, you know, there are people out there that don't know about HB2, but that's always the case on big issues. And everything I've heard is, in polling, HB2 is a concern for Republican lawmakers that are in suburban and urban areas across the state. It's a concern for Governor McCrory. And so, you know, are they trying to put public pressure on to get something done or to make it, you know, try to reiterate that they believe this is Charlotte's fault, not the state? I think that's entirely possible, too. I don't know that for certain. But, you know, we can't forget that lots of things are motivated by elections, and this is, you know, one of the more heated elections we've seen in our at least recent history in North Carolina. So it's complicated, and, you know, you never know what's going on in those conversations behind the scenes with leaders in the state as well.
Well, our guest, Tim Boyman, I want to be sensitive to your time here, but I can't help but think that I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about the ongoing presence here in North Carolina of the Trump campaign. This is something else that seems to be a weekly topic coming back scheduled to be in Charlotte, Tim, on Tuesday. And we know there's been some look at the Panthers' home football game Sunday, the NFL saying at this moment they're planning to continue with that. Do you think that the Trump folks will still be able to come, or is that something that might be a last-minute decision depending on how the tension in the city is still over this issue with the officer-involved shooting?
Yeah, my understanding is from multiple sources is that they wanted to come Tuesday, but there is a concern because of what happened in Charlotte, obviously. And, I think the concern is if he comes, he tends to draw protesters. And so if there's, some major thing that happens, you don't want unintended issues. You don't want to draw negative attention to a visit from Charlotte. It's not unusual for candidates to visit a place like this that's been through things. We saw Donald Trump go to Louisiana,
right,
when they had the issues there. A president does it almost all the time as well. That's a whole other debate about what happened in Louisiana. But anyways, I do think there was a thought about going to Charlotte. I think it's probably still under consideration. But I do think that, don't forget, these folks have Secret Service.
Right.
So they have a say in what happens as well. I do know that Hillary Clinton has a fundraiser in Chapel Hill Tuesday night as well. And my belief is that she will hold a public event too. So I think we're going to see both candidates. If we don't see Donald Trump in Charlotte, I think there's a chance we see him, somewhere else, as well. Whether it's Charlotte or not, I think is to be determined, and I think is probably still under consideration based on what we have seen in Charlotte. And last night was more peaceful. I think most people hope and believe that with the National Guard and the curfew that it will continue that way. But Sunday's a different day when you're trying to bring 50, 60,000 people in, and if they, protesters want to make a stance, that's an opportunity. So I'm sure there's great concern about that as well.
Absolutely. Finally, Tim, where is Hillary? She's canceled some events. Have you heard anything about what's going on there? She's not being very public in the last day or so.
My understanding is that they're in full debate prep mode. I don't speak to her head office in New York, but I do have connections to people that, are close to the campaign here. Look, this debate Monday night is a big, big moment. I think they sense that. And on top of it being a big night because it is the first debate and because we saw what happened with Donald Trump in the debates in the primary, I think there's an unpredictable nature that they're probably incredibly concerned about. And so, I think there's intense preparation for the debate going on. The problem for her when she cancels this thing is that people go right back to the health concerns.
Sure.
And they do that all the time. But everything I know of and understand is that there's a pretty intense debate prep going on as we are just a few days away from that first big night.
Well, I know we're all looking forward to that. And, as weird as it may sound, we'll be watching. Because,
no question.
Even though there's Monday Night Football on, I'm sure we'll be tuned in because this is very, very important. Well, Tim,
TV night.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Tim Boyum, anchor of Capital Tonight, always a pleasure to have you on. Is there anything you're working on special that we need to tune in for tonight or the next couple of days?
Well, I'm actually going to the Outer Banks to go fishing for the next 2 days, so hopefully nothing happens and I can enjoy myself on a boat. But we are doing Monday night for the debate. We're doing an hour pre-show and an hour post-show for the debate with North Carolina members of the legislature and Congress joining us to dissect it and what it means for North Carolina as well. So we should have some pretty great pre- and post-game programming if people are looking for a North Carolina feel to the presidential coverage.
Good. Well, I hope you have a wonderful time, catch a lot of fish, and we'll look forward to talking with you again, as always, next Friday.
All right, man. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks, Tim. Always a pleasure to talk to Tim Boyum. He's very professional. These TV anchor guys, they really have to be on top of everything that's going on, and Tim Boyum never fails to provide us with his insight and knowledge, and I really think I could ask him about just about anything and he would be able to answer in a very positive way. So I should have asked him about this. Bloomberg.com, there's an article that says, do you want to stop or slow climate change? Stop having babies. And so this is the latest installment of the idiocy that we are hearing from those who are caught up in this idea or notion that too much carbon dioxide is man's fault completely. And now it's not just, you know, smokestacks and manufacturing and carbon-heavy fuel. It's not just the big cars that we drive, but now it's people in general. So if we could just stop the population growth of the entire world right now and no more children, then we'll all be okay. Otherwise, we're going to basically, I guess, burn to death from the sun, or maybe everybody will fall into the ocean. And so just stop having kids, folks, if you really care about the planet. So I think that's enough about that. Where does it end, folks? I mean, really, is it the internet that just now, I mean, this is Bloomberg, you know, typically respected publication, and taking this stuff seriously? I don't know. Well, Blue Cross and Blue Shield, we were talking earlier to Melissa Quinn about Obamacare in North Carolina. And oddly enough, one of the big stories today is that Blue Cross and Blue Shield has announced that they will continue to offer individual coverage through the exchange here in North Carolina. And so people in all 100 counties will be able to continue to get their health insurance, although it's probably going to be very expensive. They're going to be in business in 2017 for the Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. Now, Cigna is going to offer a limited amount of coverage, and so they will still be in state doing that. Although I don't think they really want to be, because as we talked with Melissa, these companies are just hemorrhaging money. Cigna will offer plans in Chatham, Johnston, Nash, Orange, and Wake counties. And so, you know, the bottom line, folks, is, you know, this was a nice idea, but people that need insurance, people that had pre-existing conditions, they're the ones that were attracted to this, not the young, typically healthy, you know, folks that would be on a health insurance plan for years and never use it, and therefore the premium stream could help offset the claims. No, those that need the insurance are the ones that signed up, and of course they're typically going to be more claim active in going to the doctor and the hospital, etc. And so these insurance companies are just getting hammered. And so there you go. The North Carolina Charter School Office received 38 applications for 2018. Again, yesterday I wrote an article, and you can find it at NC Capital Connection, talking about the surge for the demand of school choice in North Carolina. And our good friend Daryl Allison from Parents for Educational Freedom in North Carolina, what a great guest, talking about, look, people want choice. And if the traditional public schools, not to hammer them, but if they were doing the job that people expect them to do, and that would be commensurate with the billions of dollars that they receive, then this demand for school choice would not be happening. But the reality is that the traditional public schools are not doing, living up to the expectations of parents. And so they're looking elsewhere. They're looking at charter schools. They're looking at private schools. They're using opportunity scholarships, which is designed to help those who are, you know, not as well off to be able to go to private school. So all of this, homeschooling, all of this is surging in North Carolina. Well, we've had a great week here on What Matters in North Carolina. Please tell your friends and family. Come to freedomactionnetwork.com anytime and listen to the program. You can also find us in the iTunes and Google Play stores as well. We have a great show planned for you on Monday, and hope you have a great weekend. And thanks for listening to What Matters in North Carolina.